an Accessible Media Incorporated original production.
This is Insights on AMI Audio. I'm David Kincaid. Later, Dr. Carl Cabasell joins AMI's Marianne Dion Jones to tell us how you can stay safe from hepatitis while traveling. But leading off the show, Greece is facing the possible crash of its economy and an exit from the Eurozone after they failed to repay more than 240 billion euros to international creditors. Loans intended to save the Mediterranean country from bankruptcy were provided on the promise of significant austerity measures. For the last 5 years, government spending on social services and healthcare has been slashed. Hospital budgets alone were cut by 25% between 2009 and 2011. So how are people with disabilities being affected by the changes? We spoke with President of the European Disability Forum, Yanis Vardakistanis. He joined AMI's Jason Vermesh by phone from the island of Zakynthos off the west coast of Greece.
I'm Jason Vermesh. Joining me by phone from Zakynthos is Yanis Vardakistanis, President of the European Disability Forum. Mr. Vardakistanis, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you and through you to your audience.
Now, you're currently in Greece. What are people saying and how are they feeling about the current situation in the country?
In fact, I am not currently in Greece. I live in Greece. And I'm also the president of the Greek Confederation of Disabled People, so I know very well how people feel and how people have felt and have gone through this crisis, not only people with disabilities, but also Greek citizens in general. And what I can tell you is that the last five, almost 6 years, have been very difficult years in many areas. All possible policy areas have been affected in one way or another.
And how is it affecting people's day-to-day lives?
Well, if you consider that services that are needed by persons with disabilities, persons with chronic diseases and their families are affected, like health services, social services, education services, etc., then you understand that persons with disabilities are affected in their daily lives. And also their income has been cut in some areas, especially for those who have been employed in the public and private sector. Pensioners with very high degree of disability have not been affected so much. And also the disability allowances have been protected by the Greek disability movement. However, the most critical area that people with disabilities have been affected in Greece has been the disability assessment structure, because they have tried to put in place a reform in the disability assessment. And, you know, when that happens during the crisis, you understand that this is used to cut down spending and services and not to reform, really, the system.
And for anyone who may not know, what is the disability assessment and how has it changed?
The disability assessment has been very medically oriented in Greece in the past, and they changed the code of granting disability status, which goes from 0.1% to 100%, and they have changed the upper limits and the lower limits that the relevant assessment committees use to grant the disability status. And according to the disability status and the percentage people get for their disability, they are also allocated with different provisions. So by touching this, they have cut down the number of people receiving the recipient of services.
So as you say, the disability allowance hasn't been cut, but the number of people who can use it is lower.
Yes, it has been lower, not dramatically, because the disability allowance is provided to people with severe disabilities. So the main problems have been in tax reduction, because in Greece there is a very good and still it's there, very good tax deduction system for persons with disabilities and their families. So some people, because of the disability assessment scheme, the new one, have been out of the limits.
What about healthcare? I understand that healthcare is spending on healthcare is the lowest of any European Union country.
The spending on healthcare has been cut down drastically. On paper, persons with disabilities have better services now than before. The regulation of the National Agency for Health Provision Services is rather good, but in substance and in reality, the services are no good because people have difficulties to access health services, especially and most importantly in the public health system, in the hospitals. There has been a deterioration of health services in the public system because, as you said, of the cuts that have been taking place the last 5-6 years. And Greece, before the crisis, was one of the best in the European Union with a very good public health system. Now the public health system is in disarray.
The unemployment rate in Greece is very high. In general, the unemployment rate is 25%. For youth, the unemployment rate is over 50%. What about for people with disabilities?
I will use the statistics provided by Eurostat in December last year. In Greece, the employment rate of persons with disabilities, according to Eurostat, is 35%. The general employment rate in Greece is around 57-58%. We are in, let's say, in the middle of the scale in the European Union. However, the real situation in the employment sector is to be found not in those that declare directly as unemployed, but in what the economists called hidden unemployment, the structural unemployment. Or because there is the benefits trap. People are afraid of losing the disability allowance and therefore they are not looking for a job. And of course, it is by definition that when in a period of high unemployment, you have the general population at that very high level, you said that over 25% for the general population, and you said more than 50, I would say almost 60% of the youth, then it is easily understandable that persons with disabilities are faced with very high, open, I would say even higher, structural and hidden unemployment.
Tell me a bit about the perception of disability in Greece. How do people react to it?
I can use the public opinion surveys that have been conducted during the crisis. In fact, my organization, the National Federation of Disabled People of Greece, conducted last year a very extensive public opinion survey to try to capture what we said, the perception, the view of society about persons with disabilities, the crisis, the way the organizations of persons with disabilities have been campaigned, have been advocating for protecting what has been achieved in the country. And I need to say that the disability movement in Greece is very strong and very tough throughout the country. So the result is rather good. The perception is very positive about persons with disabilities, and also the knowledge of the general public about the organizations of persons with disabilities and their families, the Greek disability movement, is also very high. What is important for us is that society is very supportive of our demand to have a preferential treatment, if the term is correct, to protect the living conditions, the standard of living based on disability benefits for persons with disabilities during the crisis. Because, as you know, we don't have in our hands, but this is true in everywhere in the world, we don't have in our hands the forces of production. We cannot say that we are going to organize a strike and stop the trains or stop the buses or the boats or the aeroplanes. So when we campaign, when we demonstrate and protest, etc., we need the support of society. And I can tell you with full knowledge of what I say that Greek society is fully behind us. But as I said, this is because of what we have been doing over the years. You need to know that in the country there are more than 600 local associations of persons with disabilities throughout the country. There are 32 federations, regional and national, and at the top you have the confederation. So you have a very structured disability movement that can mobilize thousands of people very quickly to protest at all levels.
These federations, these organizations, they've been supporting the community to ensure that these disability benefits remain, even though there are all these austerity cuts?
Yes, yes. We have been campaigning throughout the country. We have been, in some cases, quite successful. In others, so and so. In others, we have not been. But that's life. And I mean, the real assessment is that, by definition, during a period of crisis, all people are affected, and therefore those that are faced with exclusion, poverty, discrimination, etc., during periods of stability are affected more to the maximum extent during the crisis. But anyway, we have been successful to stand up with pride and with a fighting mood to protect our rights. Even if we are not successful, we are successful to stand up. And this is a big success in itself anyway.
I want to go back to the austerity measures and speak about them more generally. Overwhelmingly, Greek citizens rejected further austerity cuts. Why is that?
Now you are asking me to make a political judgment. And I'm sure you are referring to the referendum.
Yes.
That took place just a few days ago. In my view, in my personal view, and also in the view of my organization, because we really expressed our view before the referendum, people have been tired, very tired of austerity measures. The result of the referendum has nothing to do with the question of Greece remaining in the Eurozone, remaining in the European Union. It has to do with the personal and collective experiences of groups in society, of classes in society, of the austerity measures. And I think people voted that way. And this is the only, and I think the fairest way to judge the result of the referendum.
I'm David Kincaid, and this is Insights. In a few minutes, Dr. Carl Cabasel explains the different forms of hepatitis and tells us how you can prevent it. But first, we continue our conversation with Yanis Vardakistanis, president of the European Disability Forum. Jason Vermesh spoke with him about how Greek austerity measures are affecting people with disabilities across the country.
The Greek government, led by Alexis Tsipras, will present a plan to EU creditors for the future of the country. What needs to be done?
First of all, the view of persons with disabilities and of our organizations is that Greece should stay in the Eurozone, in the European Union. We have been saying all along that our participation in the European Union and in the Eurozone has very positively influenced the development of disability policies in Greece. The recognition that disability is a human rights issue, and that has been fully enshrined in the Greek constitution and also made it very easy to ratify the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities during the crisis in 2012.
And that was Therefore, since you joined the European Union?
Well, Greece joined the European Union in 1980, 35 years ago. So the funding that has come to Greece through the different big structural funds programs has been very important and very instrumental in developing social services and other services to persons with disabilities. Therefore, the Greek government, in our view, should go ahead and sign an agreement, but should negotiate also very toughly with the European institutions, because the European institutions have been behaving in a very contradictory way to the tradition of the European Union, to the fundamental freedoms and rights that are enshrined in the EU treaties, to all commitments that member states of the European Union and also the EU institutions themselves have made to respect those rights and to use, to apply the solidarity principle when making those decisions. So it's not only the Greek government. I think the way the EU institutions have been treating not only Greece, but mostly Greece, because Greece has been used as an experiment, in our view, has been very unfair. They need to respect in the EU institutions the ability of persons in Greece, of Greek citizens, to be able to deliver, to cover their personal and social needs. And the application of those liberal policies should be done in a way to respect what are the core values of the European Union. So what we need really a mixture of, on the one hand, the Greek government respecting its obligations and its commitments to the foreign supporters and creditors, but on the other hand, the European Union should not behave like a private head of a hedge fund and behave like a supranational regional structure of independent member states that have come together to create this union. And of course, today, not only the European Stability Forum, but also the social platform of the European Union, which is an umbrella organization of social NGOs at the EU level, have issued letters to the leaders of the European institutions, European Commission, the Parliament, the European Central Bank, IMF also, asking to take into account when negotiating the needs of persons with disabilities.
Finally, Mr. Vardakistanis, I know that you've touched on this, but I want to ask you directly. How is life for people with disabilities in Greece today?
It is difficult, as it is for any citizen, but taking into account that persons with disabilities do not have the support they need and they should receive to be able to cope with the situations that they are faced with, then we can say that the life is not easy. But the life in Greece, even if it is not easy, I tell you, is very beautiful.
Yanis Vardakistanis, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Thank you very much.
That was Yanis Vardakistanis, president of the European Disability Forum. He spoke to us from the island of Zakynthos. For AMI Audio, I'm Jason Vermesh.
Hi, Dr. Carl.
Hi, Marianne.
Please describe the different forms of hepatitis and which are the most common.
Well, there are really multiple viruses that can cause hepatitis, which basically means inflammation of the liver, the word hepatitis. But the main sort of viral hepatitides, as we say, are caused by hepatitis A, B, C, D, E, and there's also a hepatitis G. But when we're talking about hepatitis, most of the time we're discussing A, B, and C. And really, you know, the short-term hepatitis, the acute inflammation, is caused by hepatitis A, but it's only the B and the C type that tend to cause that chronic long-term hepatitis that can lead to problems. With Hep B, most people get better after 6 months, but it can also cause a long-term infection that can damage the liver. It can be contagious as well, so even if you don't feel sick, you could be passing Hep B on to other people through intimate contact. Now, Hep C, on the other hand, is a little more nebulous because many who are infected don't get any symptoms, so you may be unaware that you have it. And approximately 80% of people with Hep C do get a long-term infection that can lead to liver damage. And we also know that in terms of the chronic hepatitis, it can eventually lead to cirrhosis and liver cancer if it goes untreated. So the tricky part here is that for people who, you know, have no symptoms, aren't aware that they're infected, they can get seriously ill with liver disease, So that's why in the clinic, in a clinical setting, what we'll often do is screen people, ask them some questions about the kind of activities they've engaged in. For example, have they shared needles or have they had multiple sexual partners, etc. And if based on that evaluation of their habits, we could sort of decide whether it might be prudent just to sort of treat or to vaccinate the person against some of these hepatitis viruses that can cause this severe illness.
How do we get hepatitis?
Well, Hep A comes from eating or drinking something that's contaminated by the virus. So a person who's cooking or handling food who's infected with Hep A can pass it on to others through the food. Whereas hepatitis B requires intimate contact to be passed on to another person, either through sexual contact, sharing needles, or coming into contact with blood or body fluids of someone who's infected. And you can also, as a pregnant woman, pass Hep B on to your fetus. And Hep C is transmitted similarly to Hep B through needles or bodily fluids, but less commonly through sex.
Can you describe the symptoms we should be aware of?
Sure. The most common symptoms for all three, Hep A, B, and C, include having dark urine, stomach pain, yellowing of the skin or eyes, we call this jaundice, pale or clay-colored stool, low-grade fever, loss of appetite, and there can also be sometimes some fatigue, a feeling of a sick stomach, and lack of nutrition, lack of, basically being malnourished because of that lack of appetite. If you have hepatitis B, you may also have achy joints, but remember that the symptoms of chronic viral hepatitis are often mild and nonspecific, so the diagnosis of chronic hepatitis is often delayed.
Now, how can we protect ourselves from getting hepatitis?
Well, the good news is that there are effective vaccines for hepatitis A and B, and you can actually get a combination shot that covers both called Twinrix. But perhaps the most obvious strategy is to avoid exposure to the viruses that cause the hepatitis, and that means practicing safer sex, not sharing needles, avoiding eating salads and raw foods and iced drinks when you're traveling in the developing world. Because the possibility of catching hepatitis A from contaminated foods that are not cooked, and taking precautions to avoid bodily fluids, especially if you're a healthcare worker. But you can also take immune globulin, and that's a preparation that contains antibodies to Hep A or B as prophylaxis. So in other words, if you think you've been exposed to Hep A or Hep B, or there's a chance that you will be, you can take immune globulin.
What are the available treatments for hepatitis?
Well, for hepatitis A, there's no specific treatment because people tend to get well on their own, so there's no treatment necessary. Now, for Hep B, there are some medications that can treat long-term infections, including some that you may have heard of, like interferon and Epivir. Hep C is harder to treat, and the medications used can cause some serious side effects, but there are a number of more experimental treatments that are being refined right now as we speak.
Thank you, Dr. Carl.
Thanks, Marianne.
That's all for today's show. Insights is now on Twitter. Follow us at AMI Insights, all one word, for the latest episodes and updates. And of course, you can still find our podcasts on iTunes. Just search AMI Insights to subscribe. I'm David Kincaid. We'll talk to you soon.